Hey, it's Andy, and I want to tell you about our guest of honor at the Session 2023 London Heathrow, January the 13th to the 15th. Our guest of honor is none other than Richard Turner, the legend that is. If you've seen his movie Doubt, you will know why you should be coming to the session to check him out. But if you know of his work, you will also know why. But here's the real reason why I think you should see it. For the first time ever at a major convention, we have convinced Richard Turner to do his one-man show. This is incredible. This is where he talks about his life. This is basically Dealt, his documentary, come to life. And I am so excited that we get this theatrical experience and we get to experience it together. So I'll see you at the session 2023, vanishingmagic.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, and this is going to freak you right out, it's by Vanishing Ink, isn't it? My guest today is a highly decorated math nerd. He's worked for the NSA, and this is impressive. Reader's Digest called him America's best math whiz in 2005. His corporate clients include Google, Amazon, Stanford, Boeing, and more. He's presented his unique blend of math and magic for thousands of people all over the world. It's Arthur Benjamin, the mathemagician. Art, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. What's your magic origin story? You've got 27 seconds.
Yeah, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. I did magic shows for children's birthday parties, like many did. I was the Great Benjamini, magical fun for a very low fee. And those years, the high school years of doing magic was a very important part of my life. I think a lot of what I learned about teaching, I'm a professor of mathematics, has everything to do with what I learned on how to entertain five-year-olds for 30 minutes, right? You learn so much about presenting. I mean, you learn you need audience participation. Uh-huh. It's a dialogue, not a monologue. It's a, humor is important. Having an arc to your story, punchlines, all that I learned from entertaining kids with magic, and that has had paid dividends many times over in my life, both as a magician and a professor and a lecturer and an author. You know, so I'm very grateful to magic.
Now, you met James Randi at a magic convention, and it kind of changed your life. What was the convention, and can you tell us a bit about your relationship with him?
It was the IBM annual convention that happened to be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in 1980 or 81. I don't remember which. Okay. And I was just starting to come out with my math magic show, and I was getting a lot of support from the magicians in the Pittsburgh area. I went to college at Carnegie Mellon University out there, and there was a magician there who saw. Says, "Oh my gosh, Randy has to see this." And I got very nervous because Randy. I mean,
yeah.
I'd read some of his comments, and he didn't hold back. He didn't suffer mm-hmm. fools gladly. You know, he was very negative. He had an image of somebody who says, "You can't do this. You can't." You know, very skeptical. And so somebody arranges for me to show my stuff to Randy, and he looks at me and he goes. And he's trying to figure out, am I cheating or am I legitimate? You know, and he then asks me some what I would call a sort of combination of magic and logic problems to see okay. if I could answer those. He said, if this guy really can do these calculations, he's probably pretty smart. So I'm going to ask him some questions that a smart magician should know. And I answered them, and he then relaxed because he says, "I think he really is doing what he's doing." And I said, "Sure, let me show you." And I pull out paper and I give him all examples, and he then got very excited because Randy had spent his career as a debunker, as uh-huh. a you know exposing fraudulent psychics and such, and so he was always put in a position where he had to be sort of being negative about people, and he asked if I would be willing to to go to some of his performances and TV appearances as an example of something positive. So instead of him saying you can't, he said, but here's someone who can. And he's not claiming supernatural mumbo jumbo to explain all this. And I don't think without Randy, I would have really he got me into, I was on one of his television specials. I was featured in an article in Discover Magazine and Omni Magazine. And he made all kinds of great connections for me early in my career, in my 20s. And I don't think I'd be where I am today were it not for the amazing influence of Randy.
So with the Mathemagics, what's the most difficult stunt in your act? Is stunt the right word? Sorry, I don't mean to demean it.
Routine. I guess the last thing I do in my show where I mentally square a five-digit number, or if I'm feeling ambitious, multiply two different five-digit numbers, that really does require my full attention. You are hearing my thoughts out loud. I'm explaining what I'm doing, but you're really hearing what's going on in my brain. And that definitely is the hardest thing that I do.
Does the narration make it more difficult?
You know, the only time that I ever mentally multiply five-digit numbers is when I'm in front of an audience. I'm not doing this as a... So I think it would actually be harder for me if you said, I'm going to give you a problem and I just want you to shut up and don't move and just give me the answer when you're done. And I'm just so used to moving around and waving my arms and talking out loud that I think the narration is now almost an instrumental part of the problem solving.
So, right. Yeah. Just a personal question because I'm interested. I was watching we'll talk about TED in a little bit, but I was watching one of the earlier TED Talks this morning that was showing you doing that and starting with two and working up to the five. With the early ones, the twos and the threes and the four, twos and the three, four-digit numbers, mm-hmm. It seemed that you were doing it instantly. Do you actually know the answers to all those things squared by rote, or are you doing a calculation?
The two-digit squares have become unintentionally memorized. I mean, I've been squaring two-digit numbers since I was 13 years old, and I just know them. The three-digit numbers, except for a dozen of them that people call out a lot, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6, 6, 6, you know, except for a handful of those, I'm actually calculating them. On the other hand, I've done them so many times that I may have a feel if I'm wrong. Like I might go, oh, that doesn't sound right. You know what I mean? It's not that I know what the answer is, but that just that seems wrong. You know, give me a three-digit number, and I'll square it and I'll just
972.
It's 944,784.
Now that feels like you just know it. That feels like you just know it. It's too quick.
All right, so let's put context here. First of all, I'm doing my calculation from left to right, okay?
Okay.
Which means I can start to say my answer while I'm calculating the rest of the answer.
No, that's not right, Art.
But and it was the magician in me that's probably why I did it left to right in the first place, was to give the illusion that I had it instantaneously because I could start writing it down or saying the answer right away. Okay. Now, in the problem you gave me, all right. I won't go into all the little details here, though. I'm happy to show people in person. When you said 972 squared, I did 1,000 times 944 as my first step. Literally, I went up 28 and down 28 and got 1,000 times 944. Now you can do that. Right? What's 944 times 1,000? You can just say it. 944,000, which was what I said. Add to that the square of 28. I went up and down 28. And I told you I do know 28 squared. It's 784. So I said 944,784. So it seemed instantaneous, but it was as quick as me getting to that 944 as so anyway,
that's revealing a little bit of the
magic behind it, but that's
But
it wasn't memory. Cool. It is, and when I do a four-digit number, I say the millions pretty quickly, but I still have a good chunk of the problem to still do after I say the millions. I then have to do the thousands and the hundreds and so on.
But I guess in some ways, say the number of syllables with the bigger and the million is giving you those fractions of seconds that is actually all you need to be able to do the rest of the sum.
And I can say those millions and thousands as quickly or slowly as I need to.
It's almost like being one ahead.
And that's right, it is. And pausing is okay. It adds to the drama. One question I have, for me, had to deal with as a performer is, do I ever do intentional mistakes, right? Mm. And the answer is I do not, because I do just naturally occasionally make mistakes, just like any magician occasionally, you know, the classic force.
Yeah, but a juggler will often mess up on the finale with the nine pulls, will deliberately.
And I've had magicians say, you have to mess up before the last thing, because only in that way does the audience truly appreciate how difficult it was. And so I remember many years ago I performed at Tannen's Magic Jubilee, and I did four shows, and in two of the shows I got the answer right away, and in two of the shows I first made a mistake and then got it. And it was all unintentional, the mistakes. But in the two where I messed up and then got it, the reaction from the audience was bigger. And and I remember one of the magicians say, you have to drop that ball before you do it, because it will lead to a bigger reaction. So I'm still kind of an honest person, and I don't like to... I do like to do everything honestly. So I don't make the mistakes, but it's an issue that I've wondered about as a performer.
Yeah. Yeah. What's an example of something in your act that looks hard, but is actually very easy?
So let's see. Something I do in the near the beginning of the show, where I'll take a random number from my board of numbers. Other numbers have been called out in the show. I'll take one. Let's just use the number 3, 4, 5, 6. And if you have a calculator, bring it out. All right. Or if you don't, I can talk through it.
Yeah, but no, my phone's on the calculator. So yeah.
Okay, well then you would take 3, 4, 5, 6. I'd have you multiply it by any three-digit number, giving probably a seven-digit answer. I'll have you call out six of those seven digits in any order, and I'll tell you which number was left out.
Heck, my wife's got one. I want to do this.
Okay.
I was thinking of my phone. So what I'd need to do, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Take 3, 4, 5, 6.
Uh-huh.
Multiply that by any three-digit number. Don't tell me what it is. You should have either a six-digit or seven-digit answer. How many digits in your answer there?
Six.
Six. Okay. What I want you to do is to call out for me any five of those six digits, any five of them, in any order you'd like, one digit at a time. I will try and determine the digit you've left out. So go ahead.
Any five in any order.
Any five in any order. Right.
0, 0, 1, 1, 2.
Did you leave out the number 5?
Yes, I did.
Of course you did. Now, you know, of course, and as I'll explain at the session, it's something very easy to do, and there are a lot of presentational nuances involved.
That's easy.
it is easy to do, and it's more effective if you've already done some other impressive mental calculations. If a magician just opens with that trick, the audience is going to say, what's the trick here? You know, but if you've already done some pretty impressive things, they're going to add that. You know, and they're going to say, oh, that was even more impressive. We called out those numbers in any order. Oh, my God. You know, and so there's a timing aspect to it.
So your placement is very specific. Your placement of that.
Very important. I agree.
Interesting. Do you use much mnemonics in your act? And if so, which system do you recommend?
So I learned when I was in high school, I read a book called The Memory Book by Harry Lorraine and Jerry Lucas. And and there I was introduced to a system called the, which he didn't call it that, but it's historically called the Major System, which is a phonetic code where every digit it gets a consonant sound. So the one is a T or D sound, two is an N sound, three is an M sound, and so on. And you can use this to turn numbers into words. And okay. And so, for example, the first five digits of pi, 31415, has consonants M, T, R, T, L, and that becomes my turtle. Right. So and okay. so you could turn okay. any you could turn a credit card into four words. You can and once upon a time when I would do memory demonstrations as part of my show, I would do that. I'd have somebody call out, you know, 20 numbers, 20 digits, and I would give it back to them. I use it internally when my mental calculation problems get very large. So when I do my grant, when I'm mentally squaring a four digit number, at one point I have to hold on to a three digit number, and I have to hold on to it long enough that I have to turn it into a word, and it sits there as a word. And then later on, you know, many seconds later, I retrieve that word and turn it back into a number. When I do my grand finale of squaring or multiplying two five-digit numbers, you are hearing those words in the calculation. If you've seen, for example, my TED Talk, and that's nothing more and nothing less than the phonetic code of that's fun. I mean, I use it all the time outside of performing. I use it for memorizing phone numbers, credit card numbers, birth dates. It's fun. Yeah, everyone should learn it. Again, that's something something you can learn from magic that will serve you the rest of your life.
Yes, yes, yes. What's your favorite way to present the magic square?
You know, I use a method of my own, which I'll talk about at the session, which is a customizable, personalizable magic square. You know, instead of asking an audience member for some random two-digit number, which probably has no meaning to them, I ask for their birth date. I bring somebody, usually a youngish person, up to the stage, and I ask them for their birth date, the month and the date and the year, and that goes in the top row of the magic square. And then I build a magic square around that. And so this is a square based on their birthday. It's got their name on it. I sign it at the bottom. These people hold on to these things for a long time. And it's not so hard to do. So that's the method I like to do, and it's it makes it more personal.
Yeah, no, it normally is just a random number, and making it giving it that, it's Vernon's thing about an emotional hook, isn't it? If it's their numbers, then they're going to be more invested in the outcome.
That's right. It's a difference between naming a card or giving them some information about themselves, like their birthday, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing I do in my show is I'll tell people the day of the week they were born on. If Damien, if you're willing, what year were you born?
1971.
And what month?
November.
November what?
27th.
27th was a Saturday. And... And so if you can tell somebody something about themselves, maybe they don't even know that, you know, say, oh, if you doubt me, you could Google it later. But that's more exciting to them than some, you know, naming a card that they thought of. Well, that card they thought of probably didn't have any personal connection to them. It's the emotional hook, as you said, as Dave Vernon said.
Indeed. I saw in my research that you had a paper on Benford's Law. Now, can you explain to a non-mathematician what that is and why it's interesting?
So if I'm in front of a large audience, I will ask the audience, how many people think of your home address, the street address, the number on your address, right? Now, that first digit of your address could be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. And you might imagine that those numbers are about equally distributed. There'll be about as many people who start with a 3 as people who start with a 7. And yet, there is a ginormous number of people whose addresses will begin with the lower digits. That is, if you ask an audience, next time you're an audience and say, you know, something strange is going on out there, you say about two-thirds of the, ask how many people have an address that begin with a 1, 2, or 3, and ask, and right by a show of hands, then ask them how many begin with a 7, 8, or 9. And there will be literally 2 to 3 times as many who start with a 1, 2, or 3 than start with a 7, 8, or 9. Now, this is also, this and this phenomenon known as Benford's Law occurs not just with things like street addresses, but also things like if you opened up a star chart and looked at distances to galaxies, whether those distances are measured in miles or meters or light years, 30% of the distances will begin with the digit 1. And only about 5% will begin with the digit 9. If you look at an almanac of rivers in the world, again, whether those rivers are measured in feet or miles or meters, kilometers, you will have about 30% that will begin with 1 and about 5% that will begin with 9. And it sort of slides down logarithmically from the first to the last. It works on just about anything where the numbers span several orders of magnitude. So in rivers, you could have a river that's whose number of miles is 1 digit long or 2 digit long or 3 digits long. It's not going to work with something like height. If you ask people to give us their height in inches or centimeters, you know, it's only going to be, they're all going to be like,
there's no variance at the beginning.
That's right. You know, everyone's height in inches will be somewhere between 4 and 7 in terms of what that number of inches they are. So, you know, that's not going to obey Benford's Law, but you take just about anything else. It's pretty amazing. It's provably true with mathematical sequences. For example, if you take the first 10,000 Fibonacci numbers, 30%, actually 30.1%, the number predicted by Benford's Law will begin with the digit 1. And something like 17.5% will begin with the digit 2 as predicted by Benford's Law. Whether you look at the first 10,000 Fibonacci numbers or the first million powers of 2, or it works. And there's good mathematical reasons for that. People aren't completely sure why it always works with things like street addresses and such, but it's fascinating. And it's one of the things I like to talk about to get people excited about mathematics. I mean, I've used magic in my 30 some years as a professor to try and get people excited about mathematics. And I'm grateful to magic for giving me the tools to present mathematics in a magical way. So once again, I am grateful to magic for all that it's done in my life.
Now, one thing, this is going to be a segue and a half. Are you ready? One thing that magic's done for you is going to bring you to London in January to perform at the Session. Now,
what?
Can you talk, smooth, hey? Can you talk about what you're going to be performing and sharing? Because I understand you're going to be doing a lecture and the gala show, right?
It'll be a show and tell. So in the gala show, I will do my show. I will demonstrate what I perform for audiences all over the world, and it's I hope very entertaining. And then in the session that will come after the show. So I have asked that my performance piece come before the session piece, because
I want
to
show
be able
before
to
you
explain.
Tell.
Yeah, exactly.
It's right? Not called tell and show, is it? Come on.
No, right? It's pen and teller. The telling comes after the opening, right? So and then in the session, I will go into really just the details about everything, but from how to do mental arithmetic really quickly, all focusing on the stuff that really you can practically learn without too much terrible time and practice, and then as well as at least one way of creating the magic square. I'll show my method for creating the birthday magic square. I will how to do the missing digit thing that I demonstrated earlier, and just be there to answer questions about anything. So I mean, I love hanging out with magicians, and this when I saw about the session. I'm on a world tour right now with my wife on a year-long sabbatical, and we are visiting 30 different countries from over the next we're 2 months, 2.5 months in. So over the next 9 months, we will be visiting another 20 countries or so. And I, by the way, anybody who watches this and listens to this, and if you are listening to this and you are from South Africa or India or Singapore or Thailand or Indonesia or Japan, please reach out to me, because I will be out there in February through May, and I would love to do lecture at your institution. So
there we go. We do. Because I can see on the stats of where people are that download the audio version. YouTube don't give me the stats of where people are specifically, but I can, and they are in all of those places. We've got listeners in the most peculiar, sometimes a couple of places I had to look up because I'd never even heard of, but it is all around the world. So and is serious, listeners, if you are there and you've got a magic club, reach out. Now, the other person that's going to be at the session is Dr. Matt Baker.
Now, oh, wonderful.
He also is maths and magic. So what I'm going to propose to Andy and Joss is a new event for the session this year, which is a maths cage fight. Because I don't think there's room for two math-based magicians in the world. So there's going to be one winner. It's going to be a fight to the death. Are you okay with that?
That's right. Yeah, tell Matt Baker I've got his number. We're going to square off, baby. And this is going to be... Well, someone's going to be going to zero, man. I tell you.
I'll get him to do some smack talk as well. And that's the trailer for the session. Everybody will be coming. Now, you've not been before, but one of the things that I think makes the session different is that it's not huge. It's a smaller convention, and there isn't much else, to be honest with you, much else to do around the location of the hotel. So everybody tends to hang out all the time there. Are you a hanging out kind of guy?
Course,
are you happy
no,
for people I, to come up and ask I, you questions? And
I'm a talker. Just come by. I'll share anything. This is what I'm doing it for. I said to Andy, this sounds like a fun place to be. I'm as interested in hanging out and learning, spending time with Matt Baker will be great. We only get to see each other once or twice a year at mathematics conventions. It'll be great to be able to see each other at a magician's conventions. Yeah.
Well, I very much look forward to it. But we are out of time. We always end the show with four quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Uh-oh. I am ready.
Favorite movie?
When I was in high school, it was the musical Hair.
Favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni and onions.
Favorite person or people who make music?
Stephen Sondheim.
And finally, who would you rather fight, one massive Josh or 100 tiny Andys?
Oh, man, I'll go with 100 tiny Andys. That sounds like fun.
Perfect. Art Benjamin, thank you so much for giving us your time today. I really appreciate it, and I look very much forward to seeing you in January in London. Absolutely. At the session.
Absolutely. All right, wonderful.